Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smirchpod Royale.
Barker and Moran, your punctuality itself. Has everything proceeded according to schedule?
Indeed it has. Number 10, Moran Moriarty, with brackish cigar case at midnight exactly.
Perfect.
With one exception. A trifling one, perhaps. But I simply do not happen to be Colonel Moran.
Sherlock Holmes.
At your service.
Hello and welcome to Smirchpod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films and Bond-related films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Raine. This week, we'll be journeying back in time to solve the crime of the century and the century after, so we're told. There'll be disguises, surprises, and a taste of real American life in 1901, seen through the eyes of a simple idiot. Yes, it's Sherlock Holmes in New York. And joining me to don a deerstalker, grow some sideburns, and catch a cab is historian and host of the excellent Faces of Fascism podcast, Stephen Graham.
Hello, John. Hello.
Hello. It's lovely to have you back on.
Ah, yes. It's tremendous to be on, as always.
We haven't spoken since when we were lions, whatever it was called.
When Lions Roared. When Lions Roared, was that what it was called?
Yes.
The sort of six-hour epic. I mean, it would be a great lockdown viewing, actually, if you think about it.
Yeah.
If you've got nothing to do, nowhere to go, and you don't mind being bored out your mind. But, hey, we've got something a lot shorter to watch today.
Not short and better.
No.
It's an interesting experiment. It's like, you know, when people say, if you put a hat, it would be interesting if you put a hat on a dog, that'd look quite funny, wouldn't it? It'd be like, what if Roger Moore was Sherlock Holmes? What would happen?
It's one of those brilliant stories of Roger's loose approach to filmmaking. They did approach him to make it some time prior, and he wasn't interested. He didn't fancy playing Sherlock Holmes. Then he realised that he'd have a lot more dialogue than he did as either Bond or the Saint. There was a big gap, which you might be able to tell us about this. There was a big gap between Golden Gun and Spy Who Loved Me.
Yes.
And this came between those.
Yes.
And it was also being shot entirely in LA, where he happened to be living at the time. So it was just something that was convenient for him to do.
I wonder if the gap was him going to make films like Gold and Shout of the Devil and things like that. I think they were in Africa or South Africa.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe he was just out there doing those. I don't know.
No, because I always wondered the reason for it. Because the gap between Golden Gun and Spy Who Loved Me is longer than had been previously. Not like now, where we have about 12 years between a Daniel Craig film. But, you know, prior to Golden Gun, they'd been churning them out every sort of 2 years, hadn't they?
Yeah. Well, to be fair, Golden Gun's, what, 75?
Golden Gun's 74, Spy
is
77, so yeah, longer than usual.
Maybe he fancied a brick.
Why not?
But this is brilliant because what the first thing we see is Moriarty's internal lair. I don't mean his bum. And Moriarty.
Set the tone already.
Exactly. And Moriarty, played by John Huston.
Yes.
Wonderful director, and of course an actor with such range.
Such range from North Dublin to just south of North Dublin. I'm not sure what's going on here. Rog never got to be directed by John Huston. This is his only time he worked with him. Oliver Reed was the original choice, though, apparently.
What, for Moriarty?
Yeah, according to Rog's autobiography.
He would have been better.
I think he would have, and he would have done it in his own. He would have been scary as well. John Huston's too cuddly a figure to be a scary Moriarty.
Yeah, also he sounds like he's just walked out of Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
Ah, Mr. Holmes, once more you've defeated my plan.
There's the brilliant line he has in this very first scene where he says, "Damn and blast ye for the middler that ye are, sir, with your West End ways, tacking down your upper class nose and only happy when you're dressing up as someone else as though life was some schoolboy lark." Which I think that nails the character of Sherlock Holmes quite perfectly, really.
It does, and you've done that better than John Huston did. I like the way he's got like a to-do list on the wall as well. I thought that was quite cute.
Yeah, every villain needs one. In fact, that was the other thing about working with John Huston that Rog really enjoyed, and which also again shows his how dedicated he was to this film. Really, was that his main memory of it was playing backgammon and smoking cigars between scenes with John Huston, because both men were great fans of both. So they had a lovely time. That's what we have to remember as we watch this movie. Everyone in it had a lovely time.
No, they certainly did.
That's the important thing.
I mean, the people watching it didn't.
No, they
everyone
didn't.
In it did. But basically, Sherlock turns up in disguise because this Sherlock loves a disguise.
Well, the real Sherlock does as well.
Yeah, but your Benedict Cumberbatch doesn't.
No, he doesn't. Although there are links to the Benedict Cumberbatch Holmes that we'll come to later.
Yes.
For Holmes nerds like me.
Yeah, you're right. The real Sherlock did, and this one is no different because he comes in disguise, looking a bit like Mr. Pastry.
Yeah, he looks like he's disguised as a man who's just come out of the Burns unit. His top lip sort of taped up, isn't he? He's supposed to be Colonel Moran. I suppose no one else in the world is going to look like that, so you would be taken in straight away, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But he takes great pleasure in removing the disguise in front of Moriarty. It's a bit like one of those horror films where a man will transform into a werewolf in front of a lady. But it's the other way around. He's transforming from someone into Holmes.
Yes.
And Moriarty's so taken aback by it. As you say, he tells him to blast him. You know, blast your Holmes.
Not like that.
No. And then he decides he'll try and kill him with three devious buttons.
Yes. He's got his. This is a. Rog is sort of playing Holmes as a swashbuckling hero.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cape sweeping, and I was reminded a lot of William Shatner in this opening scene.
Yeah.
I thought if they could have had William Shatner playing this, maybe it would have worked. But then, funnily enough, I then went and looked, because it reminded me of when Shatner played the baddie in a Columbo. Do you remember Fade Into Murder?
Yes.
Where he plays a TV detective, or he plays an actor who plays a TV detective. That was broadcast the week before this on the same channel. Wow. So both men were busy. Mm. But so, you know, Columbo's gain was our loss.
It was. Roger's got also Jim Kirk sideburns in this, so he is basically
They're quite amazing. I've sort of cultivated a similar pair myself at the during lockdown. It's been my sort of facial hair experimentation during this time.
Yeah, it's been a difficult time for you.
Yeah, that's rough.
Oh, also, before Moriarty unveils his traps, Rog takes great pains to show Moriarty he knows where he keeps his chalk in a goblet. And then he goes up to his to-do list he's got on the board, which, you know, things like rob a bank, shoot a horse, that sort of thing. And Roger just crosses it out and says, "I foiled your plans, Moriarty." And then puts the chalk back. And then Moriarty's like, "Well, have a bit of this then." And he pulls a lever, and the floor opens.
Yep, there's a trap door. Then a knife flies out of the room.
Yeah, misses Sherlock Holmes completely.
Yeah, and what's the third one?
Chandelier.
A chandelier falls down.
Yeah. Then he pulls out a gun. I'd have gone with the gun first. To be honest, because that's the only one where Rog is like, "Oh shit!"
He didn't even have a fancy gun. No, it's not like Stromberg's gun.
No,
you know Stromberg would learn from this. You have it in a tube under the table.
Yes,
that's how it's done. But and there's a big opportunity. I can't believe that Rog missed this joke when he's talking about how Moriarty's gang have all been rounded up.
Yes.
They're all unnamed characters. One of them is called Knickers.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even pause for a beat. He goes straight through the line, which I guess shows how he couldn't really be arsed.
Mm. He should have said, "I've pulled your knickers down." That's what I should have said. "I've had your knickers off."
That'll do.
Yeah. I've ejaculated. No. So basically, Moriarty points a gun at him and says, "Well, I've got a plan that's going to be the crime of the century and the century before or after."
Yeah.
And then Rog just goes, "Okay, then I'll be off. I'll let myself out."
Cheerio.
I thought, what's the point of this scene? What have you arrived to do? To tell him that his operation's fucked. And then when he pulls a gun on you and tells you, "Don't worry, I've got another plan," he's like, "Oh, okay, I'll be off then." Weird.
He realised that it was time for the credits to run or something.
Yeah, because he says, "Oh, that's a shame about the chandeliers. It's the only thing in here that's got a sense of class." All right, you don't have to be a bitch about it.
The thing is, there are some funny lines in this movie that come from Rog.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm thinking they're funny because you just say them. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm finding the delivery funny now. But but then we go to Baker Street after this with no street shot.
Well, no, first we get Moriarty going to his to-do list and rubbing it out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then writing number one. And he starts writing Sherlock Holmes, and then we get the credits in Baker Street.
Yeah, we get the credits showing us a static shot of some theatre curtains, because that'll make Americans think that what they're about to witness is classy.
Yeah.
And because everything in this is, if you were to look up late 70s made for television in the dictionary, this would be in it. It's really quite cheap.
Mm.
Where there's, you know, in the London scene, there's no shot of the street. There's a lot of captions on screen to introduce scenes, which seems very weird and lazy. It just doesn't feel like there's been any budget at all.
There's another element to that which I'll get to when we get there, which tickled me.
I think I know exactly the point you mean, which is hilarious.
We'll see. So he's in his living room and he's bored. And we're introduced to Dr. Watson, played by Patrick McNee, and it sounds like he's drunk a pint of wasps. All the way through this, he's like, Sherlock.
It's quite, I've got the terrible asthma, Holmes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's quite annoying.
He must be McNee has, he's not a newcomer to being Watson. He would play him a few times. He would play him against Christopher Lee's Watson.
That's right.
Christopher Lee's Holmes, I should say.
Yeah.
And it seems to just be, on all the occasions he's been cast, it's just because people liked having him around. Christopher Lee loved McNee, and Rog and him went back to the start of time, I think. Mm. His Watson does nothing, and maybe even more dim than Nigel Bruce's Watson.
I was going to say, he's thick as shit.
Yeah. I mean, how this guy got through medical school, I've no idea.
Yeah. There's a few moments in this where if you were Sherlock, you'd stop and go, "What?" So he basically, Holmes is saying, "I'm bored," and you know, he said, "It's only a day since I've broke the back of Moriarty's operations." I thought, well, you just walked off.
Yeah, you know,
this whole film could have been stopped if you'd have just slit his throat.
Could he have gone and told the police? Maybe got a policeman to come along.
Yeah,
ask a policeman.
Ask a policeman.
As we say, also, it's been a day. Come on, his supply of skag wouldn't have run out in that time, surely.
No.
Yeah, come on.
But we've had no letters or callers.
Don't blame them.
No.
Well, because whenever anyone calls, they get McNee going, "Who's that there?" And they think it's an obscene call.
I think it's the Elephant Man.
Merrick, you've come to accompany me to New York. That would be a much better film.
It would be much better. Well, why are they called Hansom Cabs? So, yeah, he gets a letter in the post, because McNee says, I suspect you'll probably be getting an invitation to America, because your friend Irene Adler is going to be performing in America. Do you know?
Yeah.
In America.
He's just read it in the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does do Holmes' own trick on him by, yeah, you know, you take out the middle part and you just give the conclusion. It makes it appear that you've committed a magic trick. Committed a magic trick. And, you know, he's, again, I've seen it done better by other actors, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Watson likes to play that trick on Holmes. Hmm. But, just not a lot is happening here.
No.
Although there is a brilliant shot of Roger's eyebrow.
He does do the proper eyebrow shot. Yeah.
It is brilliant.
But he gets a letter in the post. You know, it's like ironic. Mm-hmm. He was just saying he's not had any letters. And he's just got one.
Yeah. It was supposed to come in 2 weeks' time, but it's come today.
Yeah.
Because reasons.
Because reasons.
Because Irene Adler sends Holmes two tickets to two specific seats. Mm-hmm. For the opening night of her every show. She has done for years and years, and he's never gone because he's an arsehole.
Yeah.
And he doesn't like theatre. Yeah, you know, it's not for everyone.
No, plus if he goes there, everybody knows who he is, and they probably want his autograph.
Yeah. Because Roger's a big lad, and he's wearing a deerstalker. I wouldn't want to be sitting behind him.
No, absolutely not.
But the tickets turn up, and they've been torn in half.
Torn in half.
Ooh. So something's up.
And Sherlock says, we must go to America immediately. He said, we can't spare a moment. And then Watson goes, yes. And then he kind of sort of wanders around aimlessly for a minute. I'm thinking, you don't look like you're in much of a hurry.
He's just inwardly thinking, when's he going to say cut? but they do get to America immediately. They've already unlocked fast travel.
Yes.
And the very next scene, with another caption, we're in New York City.
That's right. And Watson gets accosted by a prostitute.
Yeah. First thing that happens.
And he acts like C-3PO. He's just like really confused. He's like, what on earth's going on? What is this thing? You want Holmes to say, that's a woman. Oh, a woman. Because we've started this trajectory already that Watson's going to play a fish out of water in this.
Mm.
And Holmes is going to be, you stupid cunt.
He's also playing the role of leave.eu. He refuses to set his watch to American time.
Mm-hmm.
So Greenwich is perfectly good enough.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't work in other countries, though, Dr. Watson.
No, you fucking moron.
Try and buy a pipe at 4 a.m, see how it gets you.
He also is outraged by the notion of an underground railway.
Yes.
Even though Baker Street Tube Station had opened in 1863, and this is now 1901. So, yeah, the guy is... something awful happened to him when he was in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And we've never been able to... He's just completely lost his mind.
The Holmes man is mentally ill. But yeah, they arrive in America, and he says, we have to get a hansom cab. And then Roger goes, they don't call them hansom cabs here. They call them cabs. I'm like, it's not that stupid, is it? I mean, it's still the word cab is used. You're acting like he's gone, we must catch a flum, fla, 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 fla.
He's also being a bit partridgey again to continue that, because hansom is a specific type of cab. It's a specific model. So, yeah, they don't have it in London. But so it's like he said, you know, tannoy instead of speaker system.
Mm. He's basically just shaming him in front of all his new American friends.
Yeah, he's trying to show off. But then Watson comes out with a line I agree with, where he says, to think we fought a war to keep these barbarians in the Commonwealth.
Mm.
And yeah, I think, you know, especially topically, yeah, you do wonder if it was worth the bother, don't you?
Yeah, you do. The blood we spilled. The blood
indeed
we spilled.
And the lovely tricorn hats that were lost.
Oh. We won't. We'll never forget them.
Mm.
Anyway, let's move on. So they go to the theatre. On the way to the theatre, there's a subway being built, as you mentioned. And I like this because the driver of the hands or the cab says we can't go any further. We can only go left or right, and that'll take an extra half an hour. So Holmes says, "Well, where are we?" And he tells him, and he says, "Oh, we'll walk. The walk will be good for us." And they get out of the cab, and then the hansom cab goes forwards. Almost like that shot from the road being dug up wasn't in the same shot.
Yeah. This was all in the back lot at, I think, 20th Century Fox.
Right.
So these streets, if you were eagle-eyed, I'm sure you would have noticed they'll have turned up in hundreds of other films.
Yeah.
All set in the same time period.
So they go to the theatre, and Holmes says to Watson, you buy some tickets...
Mm-hmm.
We'll find out about the tickets. I'll go and find out about Miss Adler. So he goes in and then meets that strange man with the big weird nose.
Yeah, who's obviously an agent who works for Moriarty, whose New York office looks very similar to his London one.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost like it's the same set.
Were they?
Because don't they say, like, this is what, we might as well say it now, I was going to say it later, but don't they say later on, I see you've replicated your London base here in New York. Right, it's the same set, Rog.
Yeah, it makes you wonder why Moriarty was upset in the first scene when Sherlock Holmes smashes one of his vases. Mm. He seems to have one in every one of his other bases, so, you know, what are you being so bothered about?
He's basically a Weatherspoons baddie. He's got the same room in every country.
Yeah, he's picked them all, and they all have no atmosphere.
Yeah,
and to get down the toilets, you have to go off down a dark tunnel, which Moriarty escapes down at the end.
Yes,
that's where he's going. He's actually going for a piss.
Yeah. Actually, if you think about it, Ian, the Weatherspoons man, what's he called? Ian Martin.
I don't know, the one who looks like Thundercats, yeah. Sort of fallen on hard times.
Yeah, he looks like Lionel's granddad. Yeah, he'd make a good Moriarty, actually.
And I think I'd see him more as being the underling. He'd be one of the. Oh no, he'd be like the baddie of the Speckled Band. Do you remember that one?
Oh yeah, yeah.
With the Jeremy Brett one, where he had a load of red hair. The guy who played Grimsby Roylott, I think that's the name of the baddie in that one.
Mm.
He could play him.
Yeah,
he would probably be, you know, like proper sleazy to the young daughters and be putting snakes in their bedroom. I can see Ian Martin doing that.
Definitely. It's probably not Ian Martin, sorry.
No. Well, if anyone called Ian Martin is listening.
Yeah, it's not you. We didn't say that. Anyway, so at the theatre we find out that Irene Adler, he gives them an act like, yeah, everything's fine, don't worry about it.
Hmm.
And then Rog does some deducing in the theatre talking about how they were given the same seats.
Yeah, the seats that normally are reserved for Holmes and Watson, the tickets were again available.
Mm.
So this lures him to deduce what the audience deduced immediately, that this was a lure from Moriarty.
Mm.
And then we get some more racism from Watson when they go back to the performance, and he goes, "There's not a red Indian in the entire place!"
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Oh, this is going to be a long one, isn't it?
Yeah, they also get quite confused about the ticket situation. When they're talking about the tickets, that's when Holmes says, "He said it was the crime of the century." And I was thinking, maybe Moriarty's behind Ticketmaster. Because they are quite a criminal enterprise.
They are a bit. Or maybe he just wrote this play and it's terrible.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine it's going to be good. I mean, the audience don't look particularly enthused as they're turning up to watch it.
No. And then just as the play's about to start, someone comes out and says, "I'm afraid Miss Adler is not here." Sort of stand-in, and then Holmes says, "There's not a moment to lose."
Yeah, he storms out. Everyone else remains, though. They're patient.
Also, as Watson's about to argue, Holmes says, "No time for butts, Watson." And I'm thinking, oh, he really wanted to look at some butts.
My mate bought a toaster. We go through celebrities' Amazon purchase histories so you don't have to keep calm and love Dom Jolly novelty keyring and fridge magnets.
Yeah, I love that.
The G-spot.
The good vibrations, guys.
Green dot laser sight rifle gun scope.
I've bought that quite a lot of times, I think.
Right, okay. The sex doctor's guide to keeping it hot.
Ah, interesting.
Did another child come along 9 months later?
Yeah.
Loads of great apps up now, and new ones dropping every Monday. That's My Mate Bought a Toaster from Great Big Al.
The amazing bit about this is that Holmes goes on to deduce at incredible length that because Irene Adler has not turned up to appear in the first night of the show in which she is starring, that she's not happy.
Well, this is it, because they go to her house and we meet Irene Adler, who's played by Charlotte Rampling.
Yeah.
Just another actor who's slumming it in America, and good on her. She comes down the stairs in her house, because the butler won't let them in. He says, "Not even for Sherlock Holmes." And she comes down, and then he basically does like Sherlock Holmes's version of Through the Keyhole. He wanders around her living room going, "Ooh, what's this? And he deduces the entire what's going on.
It's The terrible thing, whenever I'm watching Sherlock Holmes, my default is to imagine it being played by Jeremy Brett.
Yeah.
And I could imagine him doing that scene brilliantly.
Mm.
And being able, because it's very long and there's a lot of deduction and a lot of moving around, and he'd have been leaping over the sofas and he'd have been picking up dust from things. And whereas this is Rog being, it's Roger Moore in New York.
Mm.
It's yeah. not Sherlock Holmes. It's not in Sherlock New York. Holmes. He then picks up a photograph and says, "Who's this child? It's your son, Rog. It's Jeffrey, your son." It's actually Irene Adler's son, Scott.
Mm.
But yes, he's played by Roger's son.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Okay. Yeah, way of keeping him around.
His second appearance on the show, because he's also in Fire, Ice and Dynamite.
Really? Ah, yeah. I haven't seen that one. But this is one of the, you know, I'm not one of those people who gets all crazy about how Sherlock Holmes is portrayed.
Hmm.
You know, I think, Conan Doyle himself famously couldn't give a fuck. There's the quote attributed to him where some, I think it was a playwright, said, I'd like him to get married at the end of my play. Would that be okay? And Conan Doyle just said, you can marry him, you can murder him, do whatever you like. He had a very low opinion of the character that made him the most money and made him most famous.
Well, because he killed him off, didn't he? And then obviously,
cause yeah, he didn't
give a fuck and then had to bring him back.
Yeah, the public reaction was, city gents would walk around London with black armbands on.
Oh, God.
It was really quite heavy stuff. it was the biggest thing. And then, I was, because then when The Return of Sherlock Holmes came out, The Empty House, it was published in America before here. That would be an outrage nowadays, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, there'd have been a Twitter storm about that. It's like when they show the trailers for Doctor Who before they show them here.
Yeah.
Mm. But what I was going to say was, even though I'm not particularly bothered about how Holmes is portrayed, the portrayal of Irene Adler in this is very, very bad.
Yeah.
She appears in only one short story, A Scandal in Bohemia, where she is a strong, independent woman with her own agency who does what she likes.
Mm-hmm.
She sees who she likes, and she beats Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
Which, for Victorian literature, must be an extremely rare thing.
Yeah.
But in this, she faints all the time.
Mm.
That's what she spends most of her time doing, in fact.
Mm.
And she's just generally damselish.
Yep.
Yeah, I wouldn't be... I think she's the most... Of all the characters, I'd say she's the one who's most poorly served by this adaptation.
Definitely. Mm. Well, apart from Watson. Because we get Watson here. When she finally says, "Look, my son's been kidnapped," and she starts crying in Holmes' arms, Watson says, "She's at the end of her tether." And at which point I turn around if I shall and go, "I've got fucking eyes." I mean, it's just such an unnecessary moment.
Imagine the outtakes of this.
Yeah.
It's like, remember, you know, the View to a Kill outtakes with Rog swearing.
Yeah.
Fuck
him.
Yeah, there's probably hours of Rog swearing outtakes of this in a vault somewhere at NBC.
All right.
I just can't believe it.
Well, life is short. I mean, f*** him. You know, who needs it? Come on, get the way.
I just keep thinking of that wonderful Alexei Sayle sketch where Watson wants the pay rise. Remember that one?
Oh, no, I don't remember that
one. It's Capaldi as Sherlock Holmes.
I was going to say, was Peter Capaldi in that one, yeah.
Mm.
Oh, I'm sure it's on YouTube. I'll look at that.
Yeah, look it up. It's amazing. It's just everything he says, Watson's like, amazing. It turns out he's after a pay rise.
Ah, kettle's boiled.
What was that, Holmes? I didn't say anything.
Gentlemen, would you like a cup of tea? The kettle's just boiled.
Thank you, Mrs. Roly-Poly.
Holmes?
Yes.
You knew the kettle was boiling, didn't you?
No, I didn't know.
My God, your modesty is exceeded only by your genius. You heard the whistling sound, which you deduced was caused by steam, which results when water is boiled in an enclosed space.
Oh, I'm sorry, I can't take any more of this. I'm going out for a walk.
My God, my God, the door! How did you know the door was there? Are you some kind of a god?
Just calm down, Watson. You're only looking for a rise, aren't you?
You really are a genius, Holmes.
But then he gets... Holmes receives a note.
Yeah.
telling him, don't cooperate with the fuzz.
Yeah, we'll kill the boy.
Yeah, don't go grassing to the popo. Mm-hmm. How do they talk in New York?
The
police.
The coffee and the Norfy police. He's also got no patience here, because when the butler brings him a message, he says, it's a telegram. And he goes, well, why didn't you give it to Adler? And he says, it's not for her, it's for you. And he says, it's a telegram for you. And he goes, telegram? What does it say? He's like, he hasn't even fucking opened it. Be patient. Christ.
So, yeah, so Moriarty has kidnapped Irene's son, Scott.
Yeah. Oh, and also Holmes goes a bit Dominic Littlewood, because when the carriage that delivers the telegram rides off, Holmes runs out of the house, stands on the pavement, looks at it go away, leave, and says, wait! Chase it or something? I don't know.
I thought you were about to say he asked if the driver was married. Oh, dear. But, so Holmes has been put in a precarious situation here. And then
he reveals to Watson that his middle name is Scott.
Yeah, and this is the point I was wanting to bring up. This is what you can now ask friend of the show, Mark Gatiss, because he says to Watson, my full name is William Sherlock Scott Holmes, which is it isn't. Right. That never appears anywhere in the Holmes canon. But then in the new Holmes with, well, new it's finished now, but the modern Holmes with Benedict Cumberbatch, he gives his full name as that as well.
Oh.
So I wonder if either Gatiss and Moffat, they lifted it from this film, or there's also a book, a sort of fictional biography of Holmes, which uses the full name as well. Mm. And you know how, well, Gatiss is such a fan of dropping in references to things that he's read and things, so I wonder to what extent was that a little eyebrow for some of the more observant fans?
Well, everybody knows that when it comes to Sherlock Holmes, this is the definitive adaptation.
Oh, completely.
Jeremy Brett apparently watched this 67 times before he did his series.
He didn't even bother reading any Conan Doyle.
No,
he just read
you?
This. Yeah, fuck it. There is a brilliant quote from Rog. I was going to leave it to the end about his about this film. He says very little about it in My Word Is My Bond. But he says, I won't say this is regarded as one of the most popular or warmly remembered Holmes films, but we certainly had fun making it.
Can't say fairer than that.
Yeah, there we go.
And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirchpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two, so please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like. And, you know, why not even buy Thunderbook? Hey, why not? See you next time.
Come on and hop, hop, come and do the kangaroo. Hop, hop, that's the dance for me and you. If you're over 80, you can waltz a little while. But hopping about the parlor is the very latest style. Come on and hop, hop, hear the music go and pop. You'll never, never want to stop. There's no other kind of dance at all. So come along, my honey, make the others look small. Come and do the kangaroo, if you know what's good for you. Come and do the kangaroo, hop. Hop, 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 hop. Come and do the kangaroo, hop, 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 hop. That's the dance for me and you. If you're over 80, you can waltz a little while. But hopping about the parlor is the very latest style. Come on and hop, 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 hop. Hear the music go and pop. You'll never, never want to stop. There's no other kind of dance at all. So come along, my honey, make the others look small. Come and do the kangaroo. Come and do the kangaroo. Come and do the kangaroo.
Hi, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.